From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange Monday held a press conference from his sanctuary in the Ecuadorian embassy in London. Today, we bring you the second half of that interview.
Okay. Jake Hicks asks, do you think the intelligence report released by the CIA undermines the leak, or is this just growing pains of a major leak like this?
You know, we like attention to our materials. So from our perspective, we have, as a publisher, we're absolutely thrilled with this report because it has the FBI, NSA, CIA, and ODNI all coming into our camp, mutually endorsing what we've said all along, that, of course, with a WikiLeaks publication, you can rely on the fact that we have verified it in many different ways, and that it's accurate. So we think it substantially adds weight to it. Now, as to what the motivations are by the Obama administration to produce such poor intelligence reports that are angled at saying that Vladimir Putin supported Donald Trump, if you like, that he's Putin's candidate, well, I think the politics of the situation is pretty clear. It's two factors. Number one, the reformation that should be happening right now in the Democratic Party structures, which normally does happen after an election, which is, well, hang on, this team lost the election. This structure lost the election. Why did it lose the election? Well, it's pretty obvious and was exposed by our materials. As a result of effectively rigging the primary, the Democratic Party didn't end up with the most competitive candidate. That's the whole purpose of a primary, is to select the most competitive candidate to go into battle with the other candidate. On the Republican side, there were 17 candidates. On the Democratic side, there were three. Already, there had been a fixing of the entry structure within the Democratic Party that led to there only being three candidates in the first place. And then the campaign within the DNC to marginalize Bernie Sanders, including by engaging in black PR, formal instructions through the chain of command that we have published in our materials. So the Democratic Party ruling class are fighting like dogs to prevent the Democratic Party base kicking them all out. That's what normally would happen as a result of such an epic disaster. Secondarily, in order to undermine the legitimacy of the Donald Trump administration, which I can imagine the Democrats are going to try and shackle this to Donald Trump for a long time, saying that he is an illegitimate president, probably over the next 4 years. I mean, you can see that already in the election campaign itself, with the placing of the DNC servers next to the Watergate filing cabinet to somehow conflate our publications and Watergate. Look, even if you believed that hackers of some kind illicitly obtained the Podesta emails and the DNC emails that we published, even if you believed that, what are we talking about in terms of impact? Well, yes, WikiLeaks was the most discussed political topic throughout October and early November on Facebook and on Twitter, according to statistics coming out of those two companies. But what was discussed is the words of Hillary Clinton, John Podesta, and her team revealing unethical practices, corruption, hypocrisy, etc. So should the American people have been denied that true information? If that true information had an effect, it was because they read what the candidates, what Hillary Clinton's own words were and the words of her team, and they didn't like what they saw.
Okay, now a question from Brian T. Simmons, who asks, Julian, is there a future for the FOIA in the present fake news attack on freedom of the press and speech?
The Freedom of Information Act?
Yes.
Well, the Freedom of Information Act is a formalized leak system coming into play in the United States in the early 70s, in Australia by 75, not in the UK. Interestingly, until about 7 years ago. It's a very important device. Unfortunately, the reality is the Freedom of Information Act is managed by government departments at the first instance. If you manage to get together enough money and time, then by courts at the second instance. And government departments work out ways of vitiating the Freedom of Information Act over time. For example, in the United States, there has been a grand jury DOJ investigation against WikiLeaks, extremely serious, said to be of unprecedented scale and nature by the US government itself since early 2010. Now, there is a Hoover Dam of documents associated with that ongoing attempts to prosecute me and WikiLeaks that dozens of journalists have asked for, and that whole dam is being kept back under the basis that there is a claimed pending prosecution. Now, if ever that is dropped, I have no doubt that the FBI and DOJ will switch to another claim, for example, law enforcement methods, confidential informants, etc.
Okay, and Paul Sorrentino asks, are you surprised with the outcome of the election, and is it what you hoped for?
Well, we didn't really hope for any particular manner. We can see on the one hand Hillary Clinton represented a consolidation of power in the existing ruling class of the United States, consolidation of the international, what are better words, neoliberal regime, an increase in conformism, creating a space which is harder for whistleblowers and publications like WikiLeaks to operate in. On the other hand, Donald Trump and some of the people around him very hostile towards WikiLeaks, making suggestions, for example, that Edward Snowden should be executed. So, you know, we have on the, in the case of Donald Trump, a destabilizing, in the positive and the negative sense, force which can throw up certain things, either very good or very bad. And in the case of Hillary Clinton, a consolidation of the existing regime. And that regime, under Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama, attempted to prosecute or prosecuted more journalistic sources and journalists under the Espionage Act than all previous presidencies combined, in fact more than three times as many.
Okay. And at Jazz Pineapple asks, how comes you guys don't tweet on international leaks anymore? It's become incredibly US-centric.
No, it's more that the US press reports about the United States, and the European press also is interested in reporting about the United States. The United States, let's be frank here, is an empire with more than 700 military bases around the world. And as the world's second largest or largest economy, depending on how you measure it, is very interconnected. Hollywood films are the dominant cultural product more than any other single cultural product. So people interested in the United States globally, and especially the United States, but within the United States and globally, people not so interested, for example, in our fantastic German leaks, which we released 60,000 pages about the German intelligence agency, the BND, just a few weeks ago, or our material on the Turkish energy minister, very widely reported in Turkey. In fact, arrest warrants were issued for 9 Turkish journalists, 5 of them imprisoned for reporting on that material, as well as attempted attacks against Red Hack, the alleged Marxist hacker group that is claimed to be the source for us of that material.
Okay, then. Liberal Love One asks, why don't you explain why it would be hard for Russia to hack the votes, explain the security, and how easy it would be to track them?
Can you repeat that? There's quite a lot of components.
Yes, 3 components. Liberal Love One asks, why don't you explain why it would be hard for Russia to hack the votes, explain the security, and how easy it would be to track them?
Okay, so there was quite a bit of false information published by the media during the election that suggesting or even claiming that the Russian state had hacked US vote counting systems. It's admitted, even in this report from Friday, by the 4 combined intelligence agencies, that such hacking on the vote counting infrastructure did not occur. And it's quite hard for that to occur in a system like the United States, where there's 52 states and they have many different procedures. But I will say that you can look at the work of, say, Alex Haldeman, who engaged in a bit of a publicity attempt later on, but he's done serious work elsewhere, so has Rob Gongrip, on the security of voting machines. And voting machines are not secure. In my view, in something like an election, in a competitive adversarial environment, one should not trust claims of security. So a voting machine company might say that they have secure voting machines, and experts at one time might examine those voting machines and agree. But how do you know what has happened over time? You need something that's quite simple and transparent, that the average person can see how ballots are being counted. Now, there can be mechanisms that are acceptable to have a combined system where you have hand-counted ballots and voting machines. Hand-counted ballots tend to stop systematic vote fraud, and voting machines tend to stop localized vote fraud.
Okay, a random account asks, why is there more focus on those who exposed the deception and corruption of the DNC and Hillary Clinton instead of on the offenders?
Well, there was some focus, there was some focus by, say, Fox and those who were supported Republicans during the election on what we exposed, although principally the good work was done by citizen journalists and people at Reddit, and then picked up by broader media. But it's now we're into a different phase. In this phase, there's a desire by those affiliated with the Clinton failure to try and do everything possible to distract from their culpability. You can see that, for example, in articles which reference try and claim that Bernie Sanders would have lost against Donald Trump as well.
Okay. And Blueberry Center asks, is there any truth to the rumor that WikiLeaks had access to RNC data and chose not to leak?
No, that's false.
Absolutely false. Okay. Okay, so moving on here, just a reminder to all our listeners that you can submit questions by using the hashtag @AskWL. We are having a press conference here with Julian Assange, the founder and editor-in-chief of WikiLeaks. AJ Vincent, who we had a question for before, has come back, wants another question. What do you think about people in the US who once called for severe punishments for you, even the death penalty?
So the question is on the Trump cabinet picks, I assume, some of which have called for the death penalty for Chelsea Manning. Some potentially in relation to, I'm not sure any of the cabinet picks have called for my death penalty, but they've certainly made in the past menacing statements towards WikiLeaks. Well, one can look at this as an interesting phenomenon. Of course, it was wrong for Republicans to have made those comments at the time that they did. They were misled to a degree by the Obama administration and the press, which falsely stated that WikiLeaks publications had led to the deaths of US soldiers. And the Pentagon had to come out under oath in the Chelsea Manning trial in 2013 and admit that in fact that was false, that they could not find a single person who had been physically harmed in response to our publications. I'm interested in looking at, if you look at this example of Sarah Palin, extremely interesting example. Now, we published Sarah Palin's emails in 2008. She had been or was at the time governor of Alaska, and she had two email accounts, and one email account was a personal account that had been used in part for some official government work, and so therefore had taken her email box off the radar of the Freedom of Information Act. And Freedom of Information Act is something that WikiLeaks has tried very hard to defend, and so we thought this was an important thing to publish in that context. She has come out quite bravely, I think, given the circumstances, and apologized for her statement saying that I should be hunted down like the Taliban, and suggested that people watch the Edward Snowden film. Now, I find that transition extremely interesting. So, on the one hand, you go, well, okay, look, these Republicans, they were being opportunists at the time, back in 2010, when they made these comments, and they're being, the allegation could be that they're being opportunists now in making positive comments. I accept that a lot of that is probably happening. But it's not the only thing that's happening. The view, according to opinion polling, of the CIA amongst Republicans has gone down to 3% approval rating, and amongst Democrats, 31%. This represents something of the changing view in the Republican Party, or rather perhaps the Republicans, about the nature of US intelligence agencies and the nature of war. Now, of course, after they're in government for a little while, they'll probably get back into the feeling that they're running the system now and that the CIA is their intelligence agency. But at the moment, there's a chance for a reform of those structures in the incoming Trump administration.
Okay, and Deplorable Elsa asks, why do you think the US media is receiving intel before President-elect Trump is?
So this is referring to the staging of the CIA report. Very interesting. We followed it closely because it mentions us directly. The staging was this. On Thursday, the report was ready, the classified version at least was ready, and was meant to have been given to Barack Obama. The Donald Trump was then scheduled to receive a copy or a briefing about that report on Friday afternoon. So everyone knows that you use Friday afternoons if you want to vary publicity. So Donald Trump's ability to respond to the contents of that report were scheduled through scheduling, placed into, sorry, Donald Trump, by having his reading of the report scheduled for Friday afternoon, was marginalized in his ability to respond to any of the contents. Similarly, WikiLeaks' ability to respond to the comments was marginalized through that scheduling. Now, what's the problem? The problem for the administration is that that report is a political attack cannon against Donald Trump, and also to defend the reason why the Democratic Party lost. So if you put it out on a Friday afternoon yourself, how are you going to have the impact that you want? Okay, so instead, they planted it on Thursday with the Washington Post and NBC, including some of the classified parts of that report communicated by officials to the Washington Post, which were more inflammatory and which can't be checked because they're not in the version that was released to the public. So that was the media play that was engaged in. And there's been some press saying, oh, look, this is ridiculous that WikiLeaks doesn't like leaks. No, WikiLeaks loves leaks, of course. This wasn't a leak. This was an authorized plant by the executive. Now, authorized by the executive, but very likely illegal under congressional law because it's a violation of the distribution of classified information. It's possible that secretly the Obama administration declassified those parts, but that is something that intelligence agency staff would not support. For example, the claimed intercepts of Russian officials celebrating Hillary Clinton's loss. Now, that is what is referred to in US classifications as comment information, communications intelligence information, sometimes also referred to as SIGINT information. That has an extra protection under US law, and the report itself is top secret. So there's a planting of information from a top secret comment report with the Washington Post and NBC on the Thursday in order to make sure there was only one voice one voice before the public, and that voice was not that of the president-elect, and it was not that of WikiLeaks or the other affected parties like Shevchenko, the young woman who's alleged to be the Russian hacker in the Treasury report released on the Treasury sanctions list released on the 29th. Very interestingly, Shevchenko is not in the CIA's report released on Friday. Why is that interesting? Well, because Shevchenko is on the US sanctions list issued by the Treasury on the 29th, so her name is absolutely public. There cannot be any protection or sources and methods to not name her in the report that was released. Now, Shevchenko has given an interview, and it seems that actually she's not the sort of person that is likely to be a source of such information. I suggest journalists look into that story. Actually, she's an extremely interesting woman, and her story doesn't really match up with the accusations that are against her. But why wasn't her name mentioned in that CIA report? It's one of many facts that could have been mentioned which don't break sources or methods, and yet were not. Well, because this report is not really about naming facts that can be checked. It's about producing something that is not falsifiable and therefore which is intellectually bankrupt.
Okay. And Curry Dobson says, the Russian smearing has little to do with WikiLeaks and more to do with delegitimizing the incoming Trump administration. Does this sound correct?
I mean, that's the... As I said, there's two political impetuses for this report. We assess based upon looking at the different players and how they're acting. And that is, number one, defending the position of the people in key power positions in the DNC who will pick Democratic Party candidates going into the 2018 election for Congress and eventually the presidency, and whose income or power derives from clinging on to those positions. And number two, as a means to delegitimize the election of Donald Trump.
Okay. And Daniel Kazemi asks, do you believe whistleblowers will be safer in the upcoming administration, or will they continue to be persecuted?
I believe they'll be continue to be persecuted. I mean, that's the... we have to understand that while there are some anti-DC elements in the Trump cabinet and a lot in his base, that very quickly, based on the history of all previous administrations, the Donald Trump administration will form its own establishment and enter into a power-sharing relationship with the existing powers in DC, and no system of authority likes those who undermine its authority, undermine its public presentation of having competence and authority before the public, and that's what whistleblowers do.
Okay. And Bagleby asks, is there anything that can be done to get the UK government to act on the UN ruling of illegal detainment?
So this refers to the February ruling in the UN that I am illegally detained and should be immediately released, and the reaffirmation of that ruling on the 29th of November, I believe. Yes, the reaffirmation of that ruling, where the UK appealed and lost. Well, it's a matter of, you know, there's a diplomatic cost for the UK and Sweden continuing to behave that way. Interestingly, the chair of the UN Working Group on Arbitrary Detention, the five jurists who oversee these cases where they're litigated before them, stated that the UK and the United States had sought to apply influence and pressure behind the scenes outside of the formal legal process to the members of that judicial panel. His name is Professor Mads Dennis. So if you search for him and Assange, you'll see that attempt by the US State Department to illicitly apply pressure to the United Nations as it was deciding the case, my case.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.